Welcome to Poet Runner, the Poetcat podcast, where we talk about poetry and running all at the same time. Right now we have with us John Dorsey, and I'm looking at his book, Sundown at the Redneck Carnival. How you doing?
Oh, doing okay, man. Doing okay. It's unseasonably cool here today, so I can't complain.
I love the book, by the way. I mean, I read all of it, and you're pretty prolific. I mean, you put out a lot of material out there.
Yeah, generally, like the last 6 years, it's usually, I don't know, anywhere between 5 to 10 books in a year. So.
How is that? I mean, how do your books sell? Because you got so much product coming out. Do you have the same amount of people buying your books, or is it a little slower, or do you not care because you just like putting out the work?
Well, you know, I care because I don't want, like, if people are going to put out my book, I don't want them to end up losing money because they print it. But, you know, I kind of have a core audience that usually guarantees that the book at least pays for itself. And I generally pick up a few more readers with each one. So it's pretty good. I mean, no matter how many sell out, people put out there, people tend to support. So I'm grateful for that.
I know you've been at this for a while because I know you've come out to L.A. to read a lot of times, and even before, for years, and I've seen you read. So I know you've been at this a while. When did you first get published?
Well, this is actually my my 30th year in the publishing end of it. So it would be like 1992. And then I started coming out to L.A., like in the early 2000s. I think you and I would have met about 17 or 18 years ago now.
Yep. It's been a while. I mean, we've all grown up, we've all changed, and, you know, some of the work changes, but some of it stays consistent. You know, but I do love your writing.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think, you know, I hope that the writing is consistently enjoyable for people. Other than that, I do think it changes. I think I was telling someone earlier today, I think my work changes probably quite a bit every like 3 to 5 years or so.
I think circumstance has a lot to do with it too. You know, what you're writing about, what you're going through. I don't know. I mean, I'm not, I could never do the whole structured poem. I can just write I tend to just write what I'm feeling at the time. How do you feel about structured poems? Are you able to write structured poems?
I can. It's not my preference. Like you, I just tend to want to write what I'm feeling at the moment. But, you know, if pressed, like lately I've been writing a lot of erasure and blackout poetry. And so that sort of has a structure to it. But, yeah, I'd rather just be writing what I feel like writing, which is what I do most of the time.
Well, I don't know. I think that's the best way to go. But there's a lot of writers that are very structured in there. Their poems are crafted. They rewrite and they rewrite and they rewrite. And I've never been good at the rewrite.
Yeah, I haven't either. I don't really do much of that. And I think... Yeah, I believe in, like, trying different things. I think if people look at my books, they'll see that I've tried to do a lot of different things, particularly the last few years. But within that, I'm not much of a rewriter.
I think the way I look at it is, like, first thought, you know, the first emotional thing that I put down in the poem is what I feel. If I go back, I'm rewriting the emotion.
Well, it's true. And also, like, for me, if I sit there and I consciously try to rewrite something, I actually usually will make the poem worse because I've overworked it.
And that's kind of funny because I saw somebody at a workshop talking about how it took him 5 years to get to his great poem. And he made the mistake of asking me what I thought of it. I go, I don't know. Maybe you should have stopped 2 years ago. I don't know. But it just... 5 years is a long time if you're working on one poem.
I mean, my rule of thumb is when I open up my computer to work on a poem, the poem is done by the time I turn off my computer. Like, So, yeah, I might go back and look at it for like an hour or two, but at the end of the day, it's just done.
Yeah, I like the poems in this in your latest book. I mean, they're all pretty. I mean, I love the way they start, the way they end. I mean, a lot of people do not have good endings. You know, a lot of poets I know sometimes don't know how to end their poems.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing. A lot of times I'll read a poem, and it's a great poem up until the very end, and most of the time it's because the poet could have ended like a line or two earlier or a stanza earlier. I don't typically have a problem with that. This book was written about 3 weeks or so.
Wow. I don't think I could write a book that quick. I have trouble just basically trying to put together a book. Want to put everything together.
Yeah, I mean, I just had a friend who happened to ask me for a book, and I really didn't – I wasn't sitting on any poems, and I was like, okay, well, I'll get them to you in like 4 weeks, and it ended up being three. So it was just more or less being under the gun, and so I wrote the poems.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at one right now, Poem for Any Girl Who's Still Listening. I just like the structure of that poem. It's not that many lines, but it says a lot, you know?
Yeah, most of what I write now, the bulk, I think the bulk of that book, but the bulk of what I write in general are shorter poems. I don't know. I like more and more. I like stuff that's pared down, like an economy of language. I mean, why say more than you have to say?
Yep. No, I get that. You know, I think I've actually read epic long poems that go like for five pages, and it's like, well, I could have stopped here, you could have stopped here, and you kept going here. You know. But.
Yeah, I mean, and sometimes you write those five-page poems, and it's the exact right amount of words. Like, you should have written five pages, and for me that happens every once in a while. But most of the time I like the short poem.
No, I like your – I mean, you're kind of we just had Bill Gaynor, and he's great at the short poem too. You know, he goes in.
No, he is.
In,
I've been.
Out.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot of Ed's. Yeah, I've been reading a lot of Ed Smith. I don't know, like who he. There's that book, Punk Rock for the End of the World, and his poems are tiny.
I mean, sometimes you don't have to write a whole bunch to get what you're trying to say.
Oh, no. A lot of times you don't.
But a lot of, you know, a lot of poets are, you know, they're taught or they go to MFA programs where they tell you got to do a certain amount of things and you got to do it this way. And then they sometimes I think they lose their voice, you know, if you're overtaught.
No, I think MFA programs largely want students that can mold into a certain thing. And so, yeah, you become something you really didn't start out as. I was lucky because I was young and I just started writing poems and I didn't go to an MFA program. And I don't hate them, but I consider that a blessing that I gave myself the time. Yeah. So.
No, I feel the same way about MFAs like I feel about AA. I don't hate it, but I don't need it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of people swear by their NFP. I mean, some poets come out better. Some poets retain who they are. But I notice a lot of some poets don't retain who they are, and they become, you know, the program.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it's, yeah.
So you want to read anything from the book, you know, any poems
sure.
that you like?
Sure. Let's see here. All right. I actually have been closing readings with this poem. Right now, I've been living in a small town of like 1,500 people, and it's basically 1,500 white people. And I had a town fair last summer, and there was this girl at the fair wearing a Tupac T-shirt. And I my thought was, where the hell did she get that shirt in this town of But so I wrote this, and it's called East Coast, West Coast in Southern Missouri. A high school girl with thick black glasses and a baby bump barely concealed by a secondhand Tupac t-shirt stands on the front of her lawn as a volunteer fireman who didn't make it past the ninth grade throws candy in her direction with a pitching arm that will never take him any further than the next county over. A love story held together with tape. Like the glasses peeling in the summer sun, candy corn at her feet. Like stray bullets in a gang war, in a music video that will last the rest of her life. A baby under each arm, pacing east and west, a drive-by that goes in circles leading nowhere, always in rivalry with possibility. Maybe the old owner of the shirt fed the hungry, danced in an empty swimming pool, and swore there was music that nobody else could hear. Or maybe she actually saw who killed Tupac and Biggie both and never said a word, because there was peace in just letting things go, like the boy who placed the shirt over her shoulders as she shivered, taking what she hadn't offered to begin with. Because when you wash out the blood stains, all you're left with is your own heartbreak, standing on your front lawn, wearing someone else's dream, shrunken down so many times with wrinkles that you can never quite smooth out, until you're almost invisible, with a snow cone melting down your arm in the sun, bleeding red, white, and blue, as a single sock fresh out of the dryer sticks to your belly, and that's the best part of your day.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like the images. I like the poem tells a little mini story, you know, what's going on at that moment.
Yeah, and I talked all that talk about short poems, but that's probably the longest poem in the book.
No, it's a good piece. I mean, it's like you said, sometimes it needs to be long and sometimes it needs to be short.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
everything
true.
In that poem fit. I mean, it's you know, when you write a poem and you put things just to put them in, that's different when everything seems to fit and seems to work with the poem. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, I do. I do. Yeah, I don't think there's a word in that poem that did need to be there, so... You know, I'm pretty happy with this book in general. Like I've worked on, you know, we talked about someone working on a poem for 5 years. I mean, I've worked on a book for like a year at a time that I don't feel as good about as I do about this, which took 3 weeks. So
that's kind of funny. You know, it's like the shorter time it took to make this book, and it's actually a great. I mean, I enjoyed all the poems. I mean, I like Trailer Park Song. I like Chris Bias's Girlfriend, $200 worth of cheap jewelry. I mean, the titles are fun too. You know, it's like the titles are pretty funny. So when you read the poem, you're like, all right, this should be interesting. Yeah, I mean, titles. I mean, everything's important to the book. I mean, I love your cover because, you know, the thing is, when you have a first thing the person sees when they're buying a book is the cover, and the cover's got to get them to, you know, look at the book and open it. And I think your cover fits the title of your book.
Yeah, and I can't take any credit for that at all. The guy who published the book, he came back to me with that image, but it was just the perfect image he could have picked for the book, for the town that I live in, that I was trying to illustrate. It really was the right photograph.
Oh. No, it works. I mean, it kind of gives you an idea of what's going to be inside the book. You know, I mean, a lot of, I mean, I've got another book in front of me and I'm looking at it. I'm not going to say whose book it is, but by the cover, I can't tell what the hell's going on inside, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the cover should tell a story too. And thankfully the last few books I've done, I think that's happened, but I'm with you, man. Sometimes I've done some stuff where there'll be a cover image and it really doesn't work, but you kind of go with it anyway, but you can't really tell what the book is from the image.
Well, yeah, I remember about 20 years ago, these poets thought it'd be cool just to have a black cover. And I'm like, just the black cover and the title on the back? They go, yeah. And like, the book didn't move because nobody knew what the hell was inside it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I've seen a few like that.
Yeah, question. I mean, I hardly ever ask this, but I'm actually doing a show on a poet that I really respect next week. But who are your influences?
Sure. I mean, I'm trying to think of who I'm reading right now. But I mean, my primary influence the last like several years has been Richard Hugo. I really his poems like really knocked me on my ass. And then lately I've been reading a lot of this poet named Bruce Embry, who wrote a book called Beneath the Chicken Shit Mormon Sun.
Nice.
And that's a great book. But, you know, when I go out and I do a reading, like I did a reading last week, I've incorporated a Scott Wahnberg poem at the front of my reading set. And,
nice.
You know, Scott's always with me. He's always an influence.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I remember Scott. Scott was great. The way he could just riff. You could just go.
I published a posthumous book of his poems. When did we do that? I think in 2020. And there's a poem in there called The Hallelujah Bonus Box of Down Home Funky Chicken. I've just been enjoying reading that. And I always like to listen to Scott sing John Prine.
Oh, yeah. No, that was great. I mean, I remember traveling with Scott. It was great. I mean, he always had some wild turkey. I don't ever think I ever saw Scott mad, you know. He was never really pissed off.
No.
You know,
I mean, no, he was a pretty joyful person. And, you know, you mentioned Bill Gaynor. Bill Gaynor, I really enjoy his work a lot.
Same
here. He's on my list of people. You know, the list is so big anymore. You know, I could listen to Ellen Mabee anytime.
Oh yeah.
And so.
I got a list of living poets.
Yeah. Well, I was at Beyond Broke toward the end of last summer. I dropped in and. I bought a book of Jack Skelly's poems, and that's really, really pretty fantastic.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, all the influence. I mean, I know who influenced Langston Hughes. I know who influenced Kerouac. I know where the influences come from, and it's interesting to know what gets people going. You know, because I mean, sometimes you can't really tell just because a person writes a certain way doesn't mean you're going to know exactly who influenced them. You know?
No. I mean, sometimes you can, but that's tough.
Because I didn't Richard Hugo. I didn't know many people knew about Richard Hugo.
I don't think he's as read as he should be.
Well, most. Great writers aren't, you know. Most of them, aren't picked up, and you know, it's like there's a lot of great writers that you know that aren't picked up just because there's some poets are better at marketing themselves. They're better at pushing their product out. There's some more people to see their work. Well, you could find another book by another writer that's maybe better, but it's not as pushed, you know. I'm glad you managed to get your work out there, that you got a fan base, because a lot of people don't have a fan base. They don't have people buying their work.
No, it's true, and it's only because I push it out there every day. Like, if I didn't push it out there every day, I've gotten to the point where people will ask for it, but you know how it goes for years. Like, no one would ask unless I had pushed it out the door myself. But, you know, one of my other favorite books is Bucky Sinister's book, Whiskey and Robots. That's a truly excellent.
You got to love Bucky's work. I mean, I love, I like the other Bruce Wayne. That was a great poem.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, there's a lot of great poets out there that we actually both know. So that's kind of wild to me that, you know, when I first started writing, I didn't know I would know this overabundance of poets like I do. You know, I mean, no, I'm happy. You know, I was, you know, really happy when I got your book because it's like I get a lot of books and they're not all good. You know what I mean? They're not all, you know.
Oh, I too get a lot of books. I understand.
So, I mean, all the books that you get, they're not always going to move you. They're not always going to, you know, you might not be able even to find a poem in the book that sparks anything. But what I like about your book, every poem has has something that has, you know, I like this. Even I got a poem about Harvey Weinstein. That's pretty funny. You know.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think my work, it's a little harder to identify the influences because I've lived all over the country. And I think some people, like, if you live, like I lived in Philadelphia for a long time, and if you live in one large city, you kind of become more identifiable with that place. And I don't know, like my poems do incorporate place in there, but they're a bunch of different places. So
I think the way you just said it, that you lived at a whole bunch of places, that's probably a lot of your influence, like being able to go to different cities and see different ways that people, you know, interact.
Yeah.
Because people in Atlanta act a lot differently than people in LA. You know, so it's a different mindset. You know, each town has their own way of being. So, I mean, you've managed probably to see different ways of living.
Yeah, I tend to adapt wherever I am, but it does like impact what you're going to write. I was in Indiana last week, and the part of Indiana that I was in was much different than the part of Missouri that I live in presently, and they're both part of the Midwest, but they're really different places.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, it's like Binghamton, New York's different than, you know, New York, New York.
Oh,
it's true. Separate state, and so it's a different mindset. I mean, I lived in Binghamton, New York, and then I would go down to New York City, and it was a totally different mindset. You know, it seemed kind of southern up there. You know.
When you were in Binghamton, did you get a speedy sandwich?
I think I did. I think I, you know, but Binghamton, I mean, when I was in Binghton, I was like a drunk mess. That was like in 1986.
Okay.
The whole culture back then in 86 was wild to me because it's a little racist and a little, you know, living around there. I mean, it's just like, it was wild to me. But you want to read anything else from the book?
Well, sure. Let's see what we got here. All right. I'll read this. This poem, I wanted to say that I had stayed with a woman who's a friend of mine last fall, and she was about to have a baby, but I've known her since she was like 18, and this poem is really about how all the women I know seem to have grown up, and I've remained exactly the same. This is a poem called Poem for the Mothers. Some of you dead, some hit by buses on urgent street corners, some with skin as yellow as a dying tulip, some with stomach still growing, in a race with history, glowing with beauty. As the leaves blow with abandon, as each step leads you further from the past, And somehow you've gotten younger, and I've aged 1,000 years just standing here in front of the tree outside of your house as the leaves blow loud like invisible trumpets with their rat-a-tat-tat on the siding of every heart. A faded tattoo carved into every tree-lined street. Every memory was once bright before it became a dying star.
Nice. That was a great piece. So, do you have any readings coming up?
Readings coming up. Yeah, I actually am reading in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on June 24th, and then the next day I'll be in Portsmouth, Ohio on the 25th of June, and then in July on the 22nd and 23rd, I will actually be in upstate New York. I'm part of a two-day event that's being sponsored by the Hudson Valley Writers Guild. We'll be at a bar on July 22nd called Elixir 16, and then on the 23rd, we'll be at a big theater called the Linda.
Nice.
And then I've got some other stuff throughout the course of the summer.
So do you have another book you're working on at the moment, or is this good for now?
I do. I have a much larger project that I'm working on. Actually, I have two chapbooks coming out in July, and then I have two full-length books that are coming out around October, but they're all part of a larger thing that I'm doing, where I'm doing erasure poems, but I'm taking like 50 pages of text from 10 different authors. And so what I'm creating a 500-page volume of erasure called Pocatello Wildflower. And that already has a publisher, even though I'm not quite done. And it'll be out next year on Crisis Chronicles Press out of Cleveland.
Before we finish, what's that? Erasure poems? Because I don't think everybody knows what an erasure poem is.
Erasure poem is it can mean a few different things to a few different people, but really it's I'll take the text of someone else's original poem, and I will take one or two words from each line, usually one word, and I will go from top to bottom and create my own poem taken from each of those words from each line. And that's what it is. You're just basically borrowing words from a pre-existing text to create your own original poem that is nothing basically like the poem you took it from.
Nice.
And it's,
no, I know, because I didn't know what it was.
I'll tell you what, just having words there so that you don't have to come up with words straight out of your head, out of nowhere, it makes the process very quick, at least for me. And you come out with pieces that are completely original, but it just sort of speeds things up. And I wrote one book that'll be out in October it's like 135 pages, and I think I wrote the text for that in about 10 days.
Nice.
Right? When normally I might work on something like that for like a year, but it's an interesting thing. I had never even tried it until February, but if you like to try different things, I recommend it.
No, it sounds interesting. I think I might give it a shot. Well, it's been great having you on here. And next time you're in town, tell me and Richard, because me and Richard have a reading series called Intelligent Beast. And actually, we're going to probably be publishing a literary review, and we're probably going to be asking you for poems eventually.
Cool. Now, your reading series, what sort of venue is that in?
That's an art gallery called Avenue 50 in Highland Park, and we've had two so far.
Oh, cool. I think one of the last times you and I got to hang out was at Avenue 50. So,
yeah, it's been a while, but yeah, no, I think you're right. But yeah, it's been great having you on, and thanks for coming on the show. And you know, when the erasure poems come out, I want to definitely have you on for that one, just so you could, you know, give us a sample of, you know, what erasure poems are.
No, that's cool, yeah, man. And I will, I'll definitely keep you posted, and I'll definitely let you know when I get to LA, which will be sooner rather than later. So.
All right. Well, it's great having you on.
All right, brother. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks for being on the show.
Yep.
And now we have Maria Wall, I believe.
Yeah. On the show. Yes, Wall.
Hello.
Correct.
Oh, wow, I got it right, because, you know, I was scared I was going to mess up your last name, because I destroyed somebody's last name yesterday.
I know, that AU like, throws it off.
Kind of does. So before coming on, you told me you were beginner runner. So what have you ran so far, or have you ran anything, or are you in the process of beginning races?
All of it. I think I'm just starting to classify myself as a runner, you know. I think, I don't know what makes you a runner. People are like, I think, scared to use that word for whatever reason. Because if you walk at all, you're not a runner, or whatever it may be. But
yeah, you know, that's
about,
not true.
You know?
You can walk.
So, over February last year, I think it was, there was this song, and I don't know what I'm allowed to say or not, but Justin Bieber sang that song, Holy. I don't know if anyone, you know, knows that or not. But that song, Holy, and I would listen to it, and I'm like, I envision myself running to this song. I don't know why. And so I got a treadmill, and I just started, like, running. And he would come on periodically, so that kind of ignited it. And then, so March, we just had March. I did my first marathon. I did LA Marathon. And between there, or prior to that, I really just wanted to do a 10K, because that was going to be like, okay, I can do that, you know? And then when I got to that point, then you go to the half, and then you go full.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm training right now for, I'm going to do a half in the San Francisco. And so that's a whole other world with all the hills. So I'm in the process of getting out of my comfort zone of all the flats here by the beach and doing some hills, you know. But it's just really kind of, you know, that. I don't really have a, it's Justin Bieber.
No, you know, whatever makes you run. I mean, I think being a runner is just running, you know. If you run every day, even if you don't race, you're running, you know. If you're going to be doing, like, San Francisco, I would recommend, like, running up hills. I mean, there's a great hill going up to the Hollywood sign. I mean, it's a good 6 miles of straight uphill.
So yesterday, that's funny, on Sunday, I did my first trail run, and it was 6 miles, but it was up to past the observatory, and other people went all the way to the Hollywood sign to get 12 in. I went just past the observatory and back down. But yeah, that was a killer. So yeah, I'm trying. Every time I see an incline or stairs or whatever it is, I'm like, okay, do it, you know? Implementing more strength.
You know, the Hollywood sign's good because it's straight up and then it's downhill on the way back, but it's a lot of uphill and your legs get stronger that way. And
yeah.
Plus in the flats are easy.
Yeah. It's all new to me. So I was just like, ooh. And then on Saturday, downtown at the convention center, there was a fitness expo. So I went to that and they had like an obstacle kind of thing, and that was kind of like a bucket list. So I did that with no mud, you know. All those things usually have like mud. This one, you know, was indoor.
Nice. So, what did you think of the LA Marathon? What did you think of the LA Marathon?
Oh, my first one. So I kind of was, once you're there, well, I know it's not true for everybody, obviously. But you're hoping that when you're there at the starting line, you're going to finish. You're pretty much, you know, 95% mm-hmm. sure that you're going to do it, you know. God forbid you don't, you know, get hurt or something like that. So it's like you're already there and you kind of know, okay, this is going to happen. Like, I'm going to finish this. Like, you know. That first 5 miles, 6 miles was hilly, way more than I anticipated. There's that one really hill one there by Capitol Hill and or City Hall, whatever that's called. And mm-hmm. so get over that guy and just going, okay, this guy I have to walk, you know. I had my goal. And one goal was just to finish the marathon, check, right, done. One goal was to not see a 13 on any of the pages. And I had like a 13.1 or something, you know, like, oh, but okay. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're walking some of those inclines or, you know, just that big one. And then there we had, was it the Grammys or was it the Emmys? There was some awards ceremony going on that
Oscars.
Night.
It was the Oscars.
The Oscars, yeah. The Oscars. Yeah. Had to run through yeah. that and see all the award statue things. And having been in L.A., gosh, 22 years now, I think I've lived here. You know, you kind of get used to that stuff and see those types of things. It's kind of cool to see it in, like, other people's eyes, like people that probably aren't from the area, maybe are too, that are running by and, like, stopping and taking pictures of all the different, like, monuments
yeah.
and things. And, you know, it makes you want to go to another city and do their marathon so you can do the same thing. You know?
I thought it was funny because I'm – when I was running this marathon, I'm like, looking at these people, keep going. What the hell? You can take a picture later.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then, I did, like,
you know,
run around race, all the things.
Oh, yeah.
So you're just kind of like, well, they're doing them. They're going to finish just like you're going to finish, you know, and – they're happy doing that, although I get it. Like, I didn't stop. I didn't take one picture. I tried my best, you know. I was dying at the end and all of that, like, don't walk to finish and all these different things. But everyone else, you know, they're all happy. And some people are out there all day, you know, or however long. I don't know, you know. And you just,
I mean,
you know. Well, it is all day. It took me 5.5 hours, so it's a long time, you know.
Wow. What was your time for the marathon?
Yeah, it was 5.5, so that was it, too. It was like, well, you're going to PR because it's your first one, so whatever, you know.
Yeah. No, I think,
so
kind of,
it was good.
I noticed from I've ran about 4 marathons in the last couple of years. My time has gotten better, but when I did my first when I first started doing marathons again, I got about the same time you got. You know, when I got back to it, like 5 hours. Now I'm down to 4 hours and, you know, 4 minutes.
Oh, nice. I mean, it comes in waves, right?
No,
and can you compare a marathon to a marathon?
Yeah, no, I hate the search
for
the marathon. I love the Orange County. Each marathon's different.
I mean,
I don't like the LA marathon right now.
But as far as
your
time, because each one's so different, you can't really compare them.
Yep. Well, I think,
like,
yeah, San Francisco is more hilly, definitely hilly.
Oh, I know. It's going to be,
you know, but I mean, the hill part's easy. I mean, if you start training right now, running hills, like, you know, at least 2 or 3 times a week, you'll be fine. Once
yeah.
your body, your
yeah,
legs are used to
doing.
Running up hills. I mean, I did the Griffith Park half marathon. There was a lot of hills. You could tell the people who haven't ran hills because they're walking up the hill, while other people are running up the hill because they've ran hills before. You know,
and you can, it's crazy how even like for the short period of time you can see the growth. You know, like from a walking up a hill to kind of just chugging along up the hill and keeping that motion, even if you're going slow, you're kind of keeping that moment, that kind of movement of a run. So when you get down, you just kind of cruise down, you know. Kind of cool.
I have an obnoxious Samsung watch that tells me how many minutes I'm running every mile. So it's kind of like, oh, stop. I was doing better last, you know, And, you know, last mile, it's like, you know, it's always telling me how fast I'm running. So it's like, oh, crap, I don't want to know sometimes.
No, I don't ever look. Unless a training class, like a workout run, is like specific to gear, like a certain pace or do something like that, then I'll look. But for the most part, I try to just go on feeling. And it's been to my benefit on a lot of my runs, actually. You know, I have a little organization here called A Better World Running, and they have like these little races here at the beach, and they do them in Santa Monica and in Long Beach. And so it's kind of good. You get your time and you get a practice, you know. I try not to look at my watch.
Have you run up PCH? That's kind of nice. That's a good little stretch run from life.
I'll do, right now I'm walking to a class. I do a strength class, but like it's a more Sepulveda here in Manhattan Beach. And then mostly the Strand, you know, that's super flat, obviously. So then I've been trying to go, I'm in Redondo, so Redondo's pretty hilly. You kind of go around over there. And I haven't done PV yet. I feel like PV hills are, I'm not ready for that yet. I'm still classified.
You know, you want to, if you really want to torture yourself, there's a street called Mount Olympus. It's a straight, I think, a mile and a half straight up, really. I mean, that, I do that like twice a week just so nonstop just because it helps, you know, get used to hills.
Is that the one that's kind of by Corinth or Long Beach? Is it Long Beach?
It's near Sunset and Crescent Heights going up to Laurel Canyon. It's a really rich neighborhood.
Damn.
So you kind of stick out when you're running because it's like a rich people property, but it's a great hill to train on.
Well, I'll meet up with LA Roadrunners. They're in Santa Monica, and they have you go up like to the Brentwood Golf Course, and I can get hilly over there. I haven't tried Mount. Do you call it Mount Olympus?
Yep.
Mount Olympus. Okay.
No, it's and actually going straight up Laurel Canyon is. I mean, it's dangerous, but. Going straight, it's all uphill, and I think the reason I'm good with hills is because I every day I run a hill, at least once or twice.
Oh, really?
Or
what do you do?
When I run every day, I'm not about speed. I'm just about, you know, running 5 to 15 miles a day, so I'm not into the getting caught up in trying to see how fast I'm running. I'm just doing me. It's maintenance, so I'm able to do the marathons and the half marathons.
Yeah. No, totally. Getting that kind of that base.
So
keep maintaining it. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do.
And
also like.
What's your train?
Just build strength.
Go ahead.
No, say that again. I was just saying build strength.
No, the thing is, how do you train? How do you train? I mean, what's your training regimen? Everybody's different.
Yeah, so boyfriend, he did the LA Marathon November. That's COVID, right? It got stopped in November.
Yep.
And I was training for a half that was called Sugar Daddy in Santa Clarita. It was June. Sugar Daddy got pushed to November. Marathon got pushed to November. I was using a Peloton marathon plan. They have on, you know, it's outdoor plan, so you listen to the Peloton classes outside. I have a bike and a treadmill. And so, like I said in my email, I have two kids. A lot of my runs are in the morning before they wake up, before work and school on the treadmill. But anyway, the plan was a marathon plan via Peloton. And I was following that, got my first half in. He did his first full. And then for the full in March, I followed his plan the best that I could do. Because he did it, his first marathon, he was under 4 hours. He was like 3:45 or something. So he's like
nice.
Exponentially faster than me, you know? another level than I am. But if he had 8 miles, guess who else had 8 miles? Me, you know, like I was just doing whatever he did. And we had a trainer lady, like a run coach for that. And then, or he did, and then I kind of copied him. And then, you know, and then for this one, I literally just Googled, because we got rid of the coach, and I Googled, you know, a hilly training plan, or I don't know what, something like that. And because it's only a half, and I know I can do it, and there's hills involved, my focus isn't, like, PR or none of that. My focus is to get in better shape right now. So when we do get a run coach again for the next LA Marathon, I'm ready, you know? So there is a plan, but nothing like, I mean, I've read books and, you know, who else, I guess, is like, is that where this all start from? So Justin Bieber, of course, I have to give credit to that. But then, you know, you get into all these books, and I did David Goggins, you know, that can't hurt me. And that life changer, like, life changer. Like, I met him a couple weeks ago. He was here in Hermosa for one of his run things he does. And, I mean, him and his mentality of, you got so much more in you than you know, you know. I don't know if you know who David Goggins is or not, but.
I've heard the name.
So then you get into Jesse Isler and. And his mentality is kind of very similar. And he had Goggins live with him. You read that book, Living with a Seal. And those really, and then you learn about habits, and I track my habits. And so that all kind of all happens, lined up, along with COVID, right? It gave me a lot more time. I wasn't going to get fat during COVID. COVID wasn't going to make me fat, you know?
COVID made me super skinny because I lost the gym for like about a year, so I got up to like I got down to about 125, which was too skinny.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, that is.
Well, yeah, because I wasn't lifting weights. Now I'm normal at 140, but because I like to lift weights to keep the keep myself like balanced.
Totally. Yeah. No, you have to. Oh yeah, no. That's why I got all that Peloton stuff, because I'm like, okay, I have, you know, I go to Equinox as the gym, and once you can't do that anymore, I'm like, I'm going to become a worker outer at home. And then once I decided that that's what I'm doing, and I did that marathon plan and Peloton running outside, I decided, yeah, I'm doing this. So I'm going to buy the bike, and then, yeah, I'm doing it. So I'm going to buy the treadmill, you know. And get a home, weights, and all of that, because COVID, yes, was not going to, not everyone, obviously you didn't gain weight, but it seems like a lot of people were packing it on because you didn't know how long COVID was going to last. Now we're still in it, you know?
I tried to stay, you know, keep training, keep running. I did a lot. That's when I started doing the Malibu, the running from Santa Monica Pier all the way to Malibu.
Because
I had the time. It's like 10 miles. But once you get to Malibu, you're happy. It's about 10 miles. I mean, you can make it longer. You can make it longer because, I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
It depends. You can make any run longer by the same street.
Totally. But isn't there a stretch there that it's pretty? You're just on the street, though, right? There's no.
Well, yeah, that's
like
why you gotta be really careful.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, you gotta be careful because it's like anywhere where cars are involved, you just gotta be aware of the cars because drivers don't really pay attention. It's like they don't see you coming
right
and they
there.
Really don't care.
Yeah, we ran it once. We passed. God, where'd we end up? There was some kind of like where the bike lane kind of ends and there's all these bikers that kind of are hanging out kind of between Santa Monica and not quite Malibu. And it was like, oh, this is sketch. Like, let's turn around. So we did.
Because
that seems a little dangerous, I guess, as long as you're wearing whatever you're supposed to wear, what do you do?
Very dangerous. No, it's very freaking dangerous. A lot of runs that I do are really dangerous. I mean, one time I was so distracted, I ended up running on the freeway for a mile.
Oh, my God.
Yikes.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, because I go, these cars are coming a little close, and I looked around, I'm like, oh, crap, I'm on the freeway.
Oh, my God.
Because I didn't notice myself going on there.
Yeah, there's one run we did called Castle to Coast, and it's up, like, Los Osos, Mora Bay kind of area, and you run there on that, I guess it's the one, you know, the PCH that's up there is called the one, right? I don't know, PCH two, but, and it's 8 miles. The race is only 8 miles. And that day for training, I had 16 to do. And so I did 8 miles. I ran to the start line of that thing. And I started at the finish, you know, and ran to the start line and then started the race with the race. And then ran back. And so I was on the first 8 miles. Because well, races start early, right? So the first 8 miles was dark and sketch. Because you're on that one. And thankfully, there's not a lot of cars going by that early. But you take one weirdo, you know? And then you're with a group during the race, but you're still on the freeway, you know? Like, oh, what am I doing here? I got kids. Why am I doing this? But I think you do it because of the excitement of all those things, you know. I don't know.
Yeah. I think in October you're gonna be able to run the Pasadena like the 101 in Pasadena. They're gonna close it off for like for a 5K.
Yeah, I think it's the 110.
Yeah, I think that's
I think it's the 110.
Yeah, I'm thinking about doing that. I'm thinking about doing that for the fun of it.
Yeah, I saw it, and I forget why. There's a reason why I haven't signed up for it yet, and I don't remember what it is, if there's what date it was. I have to look, because everything has to be around. Yeah, everything has to be around my kids' schedule, obviously. That's the hard part is, getting up early and knocking that out before the kids or getting a babysitter, and then that, you know, that can cost an arm and a leg on a long run day, you know. But it's kind of a fun challenge. If it's a priority, and you do it, you know? That's what it is.
Yep.
But I forget why I didn't say I saw it. Did you do the 1 mile was it on Sunday at USC?
Nah. I'm waiting. I got a half marathon coming up June 11th, and I got about 6 more marathons for this year.
Yeah, I didn't do it either. I did that trail run instead. It's like it comes to the point where there's, you have to pick, you know, because you want to do everything. I want to do everything.
Eventually
you
will.
Oh, my God, there's this. That's true, I guess. I just like to ride on this, like, momentum, right? Like, I don't want to lose it, of course, and I don't think I will, but you just, like, let's ride this out. Let's see where this goes and what I can accomplish. I'm 42. Still got plenty of good years left on me, you know? Let's see if I can knock out.
42,
you
know, I'm 56,
there you go.
You're a good age for running.
Yeah.
You're a good age for running. I mean, there's a lot of races out there, and it's just like you said, you got to pick the ones that, you know, make more sense to you. And the time, you've got kids. So, you know, everything's juggling.
Well, what's the goal? Is the goal to finish it or to race it to where you really are, you're PRing? If what's the goal, you know, you can do them all, but if you can do them all half-assed, sorry, I don't know if I can curse or not, you know, but I don't know. I think right now I want to improve. That's all I want to do.
Well, what do you do for your supplements? What do you do for your nutrition?
Oh, God, I dabble in so much stuff. Currently, not crazy. Like, I was having a Shakeology shake and adding some things to that. And I got to the point where I had tons of these containers from, like, with the octane oil, whatever it is, that bullet, you know, bulletproof, whatever stuff, the oil to, I don't even, couldn't tell you, beets. And then I went really heavy on, like, potatoes. And I'm kind of everywhere. Like, I'm still figuring out all that stuff out because and then I got my blood work done. And actually, I was supposed to get the stuff today, but I wasn't home. And you have to be home because it's like that prescription stuff. I'm going to deliver it. So they're mailing me testosterone, which is like a cream that you rub on, I guess, and thyroid something another, and DHEA something another, and I think progesterone. And there's four things that they're going to, that's getting prescribed based upon my blood work that are supposed to help, you know, performance and yada, yada, yada. What we shall see, you know. So I'm dabbling in all of that stuff, too. I'm in pretty okay shape. Like, I'm happy with where I'm at. But, like, again, I just get set with anything. I just want to improve. I want to get better. I want to, you know, if anybody else, you want to look better, you want to be better. And so.
Oh, yeah.
I never thought I'd be the person to get blood drawn to that. But, you know, like, I'm not, you know, an elite athlete. Like, I don't know why I think I need to have my blood drawn, but whatever. You know?
Why not? I mean, you might as well. I mean, you might as well, you know, anything that you do, you might as well do it the best you can. And it seems like you're taking
yeah.
it serious, so why not? You know, you can consider
yeah.
yourself
no, you're
a good athlete. I mean, why not, you know, because you're doing it. A lot of people aren't.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm still human. Like, I still crave all the junk foods. Not all the junk. Like, I still like a sweet. You know, I still want. So, like, right now my sweets are mostly oatmeal. You know, it's nowhere near the ice cream cookie butter I want. But I'll try. You
know? I mean, now the thing about running, you can literally almost eat anything sometimes, you know. A lot
yeah.
of times you can just eat about anything.
I know. I mean, you really, are you like, increasing your, what you're eating, but I don't want it to be increasing what I'm eating, negative choices. I'm doing about 35 miles a week right now, which is fine for me. I think that's enough kind of to get in. And then I go to, I don't know if you know, F45, it's like the peak strength kind of gym thing. Been doing that 3-4 times a week. And it's like, kind of like a CrossFit in some kind of ways. I'm sure they don't want to be called CrossFit, but it's all that functional stuff, right? Deadlifts and that kind of stuff. So that's helpful. So I hope I can eat whatever I want, but I'm not trying to have that mentality. Then I'll blow up.
I don't know. I mean,
then I'll go broke.
I think that the thing is, my philosophy, the way I eat is the more I eat, the more I got to run.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The more miles I need to put in. So, you know, it's like
exactly.
today I had chili cheese fries and a double bacon cheeseburger. So I'm probably going to run 10 to 15 miles tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
But the thing is, but my metabolism is the point where I can just burn it off the next day, so I'll eat it, you know, once a week at least.
Even if you're doing those miles, like, easy. Even if you're doing those miles easy,
yeah.
huh, you feel like you can burn it off without getting, like,
yep.
your heart rate really up. That's crazy.
Yeah, actually, I've been working out straight for 4 years, and I'm back to, like, my happy level, I call it. I'm just, you know, right now I've been just doing straight 5 miles because that's all I've had every day. But most days I try to do 10 to 15 miles. You know, just.
Yeah. Fucking
amazing. But then I found out from the 100-mile runner that you don't have to run all those miles. I'm
no,
like, now
yeah, I've read that too. I've read that too.
What?
It's like a time on feed and da 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 da. Oh my God. Lost
yep.
one of my AirPods.
Yeah,
it's kind of like you don't run your you don't run the marathon until the marathon. Same kind of deal. You don't run
yeah.
100 whatever miles, and you're going to do 100 whatever miles.
Yeah.
I don't even get close to it. I don't think. I feel like they, I saw somewhere I did it, but they don't, they, like, they'd never even ran, like, over 11 miles. Like, somebody, like, crushed the marathon and won it. Like, before the marathon, never even went over, like, 11 miles or something. You know?
Well, there's a, there's runners like, I forget, I can't say his last name, but he's an ultra runner. He runs 26 miles a day in the morning.
Oh, my God.
That's his normal.
But it probably takes him, like, 2 hours.
That's his normal.
Yeah.
Probably.
See, then what happens?
Because he's in that, but he...
So what happens when you stop? Then you just blow up like a professional athlete. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think
you think these are college players. College players, players that don't go pro. You know, they're used to eating all this stuff. They were in college pizzas and the beer. And then they stop because they're not pro. Their college is done. And they blow up.
Yep.
You know, because they never really got the good habits of eating properly and... I mean, I guess he'll run 26 miles forever in the mornings and whatever. And by the time he does stop, he'll probably be old and it won't matter. Won't have enough time to pack it on, you know? If you're in college,
I think he's about 50
22,
now.
23. Yeah, so he won't have time to pack it on. By that age, by 70, you've lost your taste buds. You're not eating a lot anyways, you know?
And you're good.
And you're good, I guess. Yeah, I guess then that point's out the window for him. You know.
Yep.
I don't know.
Well,
yeah, I
mean, getting close to kind of end the show soon, but I want to ask you, so you're going to continue to run marathons, right?
Yeah, that's the goal. Yeah, totally.
Well, you know what? I think, because I kind of like one, I have this thing where I want to have people on the show as they progress in their running, so I'll probably want to have you on a year from now or maybe 6 months from now if you've done another run.
Oh, that'd be cool.
No, because, I mean, it's interesting because you find, because at the same time, I also like to have runners on that I ran the same race with because I like to compare, you know, like, well, how did you feel about the race?
Uh-huh.
Did you like the race? And did you like the course? Because everybody has a different take. I mean, I don't like the LA Marathon right now, but another friend of mine loves it.
And I have nothing to compare to right now, you know, as of right now.
Oh,
I just know that
the thing is,
people have asked me what you think about it. And it takes me a minute. I'm like, I don't know what to think because I have nothing to compare it to. It's so
well, that's an honest
left
answer.
Field.
I appreciate that.
You know?
The thing is, what
so
you will have eventually you'll have, you know, your comparison and then you'll know, you'll compare it to, you know, to other races. I mean, San Francisco, I love San Francisco because you run the Golden Gate Bridge. That was great.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I've got friends that ran Disney World Marathon, and I'm like, that's got to be a trip. You know, running around Disneyland. I mean, Disney World is like. But no, I mean,
waving to Snoopy.
Something like that, you know.
I don't think Snoopy's Disney. I don't even think that's Disney, actually.
No, he's not very. Nope, he's not very farm.
Okay, well, so it shows what I know.
Well,
but, yeah, so I have nothing to compare it to,
characters.
And I'm just processing it all.
No, you know, sooner or later you will, and then you'll have your comparisons, and you'll like, I love the Griffith Park Half Marathon. I like the Great Race Half Marathon. And I didn't really like the Rose Bowl Half Marathon. It's like everything, you know, once you have a comparison, you find your likes and your dislikes and which runs you really want to run.
Right, and that's how I feel about the L.A., like, and then a couple of the runs I did with the LA Roadrunners, it was like the day I had to do 19 miles. It was the first time ever in my life I had to do 19 miles. I did not know if I was ever going to be able to do 19 miles. So I went to the LA Roadrunners and joined one of their, you know, groups or whatever. And because of my first day there, they didn't know where to place me really. So they put me in this one group. I'm like, okay, I'll do this group. I know I'll get it done. It is what it is. But it was a walk-run group, and I had a really hard time with that, like running 3 minutes and walking a minute or whatever the ratio is. And the first however many miles, I'm like, I don't need to walk. I can keep going. Why are we stopping, you know? But you have to do it because you're in this little group, you know? And you don't want to, like, disappoint anyone. I don't know. You know, you just listen. And so at the end of it, everyone's like, well, how'd you feel about it? I'm like, I honestly don't know. I don't know if I hated it. I got the 19 miles in, but did I? Because I had to walk, because I was part of the, you know, you go through all this I don't know. I still don't know if I liked it.
Well, you know what? Walking isn't considered a bad thing because, you know, when people who did 100-mile marathons, 100-mile runs, they walk. You know, they don't run the full 100 miles half the time.
Yeah, that's crazy. You have to know that. A lot of people
No, I mean, some people are hardcore and they don't like to stop. I mean, I don't like to stop because I'm afraid of side aches, but walking once in a while is necessary or you're going to hurt yourself, you know, and the whole point is to, you know, finish the run, not hurt yourself.
Totally. But sometimes it's harder. Unless I guess you're on like that kind of interval, 3-1, 3, whatever it's going to be, and you know you're, every time that clock goes beep, beep, you go, beep, beep, you stop, whatever, that's cool. But if I don't have that kind of system and I'm on my own and I'm doing a run, if I stop to walk, I've screwed myself over because it's so much harder to get going again, you know? And then once you've given yourself that out once, it's so much easier to go, well, I've quit once before. No one would ever know if I quit again. You know, who's going to know? It's just me and my Strava. You know what I mean? Like, who's going to know? And so you have to have to date yourself.
That is the whole problem with stopping. Yeah. That's why I don't like. I mean, the thing is, you gotta know your limitations, and you gotta, you know, take care of yourself as you run and not, you know, push it too hard. And
totally.
Bottom line, just finishing is great. You know, most people don't understand that. Just finishing 26 miles is a lot.
It's a lot.
A lot of people. The Orange County Marathon, I saw some guy passed out at the 22-mile mark because he couldn't tack it anymore. I mean, they were working on it. Poor guy was out. You know, and then probably because he didn't train well, he didn't do the right nutrition, or he didn't know what he was getting into. You
know? Crazy. It's weird because you start, you know, your Facebook and your Instagrams and your friends and your, what you talk about, what you start surrounding yourself ends up being runners, right? And so it just seems like in your bubble, everybody's doing it, right? Everybody is. And then you realize, no, not everybody is. It's just everybody in your, that's feeding you is, you know? Not everybody actually is, but it just really seems like everybody's running. And they're like, well, actually only, 1% of people or whatever it is do marathons. Like, well, I don't know, because it seems like everybody I talk to is. But that's because that's who you surround yourself with, you know? So weird.
Well, no, it's the same thing with me, because I surround myself with poets and runners because those are the two things that interest me. So that's my life, you know, and I love talking to runners. I talked to a husband yesterday. I'm going to be talking to his wife next week, so it's going to be two different points of view, and they both run. You know, so that's, I learned something, you know. I mean, I think that I learned a lot from different runners, too. I learned a lot from the 100-mile guy. I learned a lot from the guy who does 50Ks.
I'm so intrigued by it. You know, it's definitely I never thought that this is where I was going to be at 42, having a discussion about running with some stranger, really. You know, you're a stranger to me. And, you know, like, that this would just be my life now. And 10 years ago, no way. I mean, I was a yogi, you know? That's all I did, yoga, that's it. And then now I did yoga last night, and I'm a beginner all over again. I can barely touch my toes, you know? I can barely do anything because running's been taking over, you know? I'm like, oh my goodness, but whatever, who cares?
See, that's why I try to keep balance. I go to the gym for about an hour and a half, then I run my miles, then I go home and take a nap. Because I don't want to get super skinny. I'm afraid of getting super skinny.
125, that was, sounds really, yeah. I mean, I'm
it was scary.
5'8". Yeah, I'm 5'8", so I'm not a short girl, you know. I'm 5'8", and I'm 135. So I'm right where I need to be weight-wise, right? Like, so imagine 125 on me. it's been, you know?
Yep. I can shoot down to 135 and still look. I would still look healthy at 135, but 125, I don't look healthy.
Uh-huh.
It's like, what's wrong with him?
Doesn't
he eat?
It'd be the same for me. You're like, no, I had cheeseburger and French fries.
No, you did.
Cheeseburger and whatever.
Yeah, but it was great having you on, and I'll probably reach out to you in 6 months to a year and see where you're at, and probably do another interview I think each interview will be like a progression. You know, every time I talk to somebody, whoever I talk to,
yep.
You know.
Yeah.
I know
one
guy.
Great.
No, because it's just I like, you know, having the fact that, you know, each runner is going to, you know, it's going to change. You're going to change. Your miles are going to change. The amount of time it takes you to run a marathon is going to change because you're going to have more time doing it.
Yeah. And I'm excited to see how that compares, you know, because the time's going to come. Like, you know, it's going to come either way. So growth has to happen, right? So cool.
No, I think your time is going to decrease, you know, in about 6 months, it'll decrease where you're happy with it because you'll be running enough marathon. You know.
Yeah.
You know, the body gets used to it. The funny thing about marathons, I realize, is like when you first start, you feel like, I ain't going to do it. Then 5-10 miles into it, you're like, okay, I'm coasting. I'm good. This ain't too bad.
Right. I can survive. And that's the whole thing. I've done this before. There is something about kicking it off that, I've done this. I've done 10 miles before. I've done 15 miles before. I can do another 5, you know. And there is something having said, like, and playing that back in your head. Like, you know, when you get into these unknowns, it's like, oh, I've never done 26 before. What's going to happen? Am I going to just fall over and die, you know? But, no, I've definitely done it before. So I can do it again and better, you know.
Yep.
All right. Well, I look forward to hearing from you.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing you. If you got my number. If you and your boyfriend ever want to do some big trails, just on a Saturday or Sunday, I always do. I always try to do. I do uphills at least once or twice a week, just to keep used to it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. No, that sounds great. Love it.
Yeah. Well, it was great having you on the show, and I'll be sending you the link right after it's all done.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for being on the show.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.
Bye. Bye.
All righty. I'm going to mention right now, I was doing 6 a.m. sprint to run, you know, after I leave the gym, and I like it, but I'm going to be trying Bolt from 6 a.m. tomorrow, and I'll be reviewing that. Also, I take Insane Labs Psychotic when I work out in the morning. That's my pre-workout for weights. And it also still kicks in a little bit in the running. So next week, we'll be talking with me, Iris DeAndo, and Richard Moriano. We'll be talking about Rocky Dalton, his poetry, famous Salvadorian poet, great poet, and look forward to doing that show next week.